ಕೋಲ್ ಜಯ ಜಯ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದನ್. ಜಯ ಜಯ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದನ, ಜಯ ಜಯ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದನ, ಜಯ ಜಯ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದನ. ತ್ರಿಭುವನ ಕೋರಿ ಜಾ ಚರಣ ವಂದನ, ನೀಲಾಚಲ ಶಂಖ ಚಕ್ರ ಗದ ಪದ್ಮಧರ, ನೀಲಾಚಲ ಶಂಖ ಚಕ್ರ ಗದ ಪದ್ಮಧರ. ನದಿಯ ನಗರೆ ದಂದ ಕಮಂದಲು ಕಾರ, ಕೇಹೋ ಬೋಲೆ ಪೂರಾ ಬೇತೆ ರಾವಣ ಬದೀಲಾ, ಗೋಲೋಕೇರ್ವೆ ಬಾವಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರಕಾಶ ಕೋರಿಲಾ, ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾರ ಬಾವೇ ಗೌರ ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ನಾಮ ಗೋರ್ ಕರಿಲೋ ಪ್ರಚಾರ, ವಾಸುದೇವ ಘೋಷ ಬೋಲೆ ಕೋಡಿ ಜೋರ, ವಾಸುದೇವ ಘೋಷ ಬೋಲೆ ಕೋಡಿ ಜೋರ, ಜೈ ಗೋರ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ, ಜಯ ಗೋರ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ, ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಜಯ. विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य सूत्र सत्य श्री श्रीमद अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवान स्वयं महाराज प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की श्रीमद भागवतम की गीता गौर प्रेमानंद हरि ओम। सो वी कैन क्विकली रीड द ट्रांसलेशन। All glories to the dear son of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, all the three worlds offer prayers unto his lotus feet. In Nilachala he holds the conch shell, disc, club and lotus flower, while in the town of Nadia he holds the sannyasi staff and water pot. It is said that in olden times Lord Ramachandra, he killed the demon Ravana. Then later as Lord Krishna, he revealed the splendorously opulent pastimes of Goloka. It is he who has come, all from Vraja. He has come to Nadia. Accepting the mood and lustre of Sri Radha, he has come from Vraja to Nadia. He has come. Now Lord Govinda, the cowherd boy, has come as Lord Gauranga. He has come by distributing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Vasudeva Ghosh says with folded hands, he who is Gora is he who is Krishna, is he who is Jagannath. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. So now we will start the class. 24. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Visheshastasya dehoyam. Stavishtascha staviyasam. Yatredam vyajate vishvam bhutam bhavyam bhavascha sat visheshastasya dehoyam savishthascha staviyasam yatredam vyajate vishvam bhutam bhavyam bhavascha sat. Visheshaha, personal. Tasya, his. Dehaha, body. Ayang, this. Stavishtaha, grossly material. Cha, and. Staviyasam, of all matter. Yatra, wherein. Idam, all these phenomena. Vyajate, is experienced. Vishwam, universe. Bhutam, past. Bhavyam, future. Bhavat, present. Cha, and. Sat, resultant. Translation. This gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the universal resultant past, present, and future of material time is experienced. Purport. Anything, either material or spiritual, is but an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 13:13, the omnipotent Lord has his transcendental eyes, heads, and other bodily parts distributed everywhere. He can see, hear, touch, or manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, for he is present everywhere as the Supersoul of all infinitesimal souls, although he has his particular abode in the Absolute World. The relative world is also his phenomenal representation, because it is nothing but an expansion of his transcendental energy. Although he is in his abode, his energy is distributed everywhere. Just as the sun is localized as well as expanded everywhere, since the rays of the sun, being non-different from the sun, are accepted as expansions of the sun disk. In the Vishnu Purana, it is said that as fire expands its rays and heat from one place, similarly, the Supreme Spirit, the Personality of Godhead, expands himself by his manifold energy everywhere and anywhere. The phenomenal manifestation of the gigantic universe is only a part of his Virat body. Less intelligent men cannot conceive of the transcendental all-spiritual form of the Lord, but they are astounded by his different energies. Just as the Aborigines are struck with wonder by the manifestation of lightning, a gigantic mountain, or a hugely expanded banyan tree. The Aborigines praise the strength of the tiger and the elephant because of their superior energy and strength. The Asuras cannot recognize the existence of the Lord, although there are vivid descriptions of the Lord in the revealed scriptures. Although the Lord incarnates and exhibits his uncommon strength and energy, and although he is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by learned scholars and saints like Vyasadeva, Narada, Asita, Devala in the past, and by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, as also by the Acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, and Lord Sri Chaitanya in the modern age, the Asuras do not accept any evidential proof from the revealed scriptures, nor do they recognize the authority of the great Acharyas. They want to see with their own eyes at once. Therefore, they can see the gigantic body of the Lord as Virat, which will answer their challenge. And since they are accustomed to paying homage to the superior material strength like that of the tiger, elephant, and lightning, they can offer respect to the Virata Rupa. Lord Krishna, by the request of Arjuna, exhibited his Virata Rupa for the Asuras. A pure devotee of the Lord, being unaccustomed to looking into such a mundane, gigantic form of the Lord, requires special vision for the purpose. The Lord, therefore, favored Arjuna with special vision for looking into his Virata Rupa, which is described in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This Virata Rupa of the Lord was especially manifested not for the benefit of Arjuna, but for that an unintelligent class of men who accept anyone and everyone as an incarnation of the Lord, and so mislead the general mass of people. For them, the indication is that one should ask the chief incarnation to exhibit his Virata Rupa and thus be established as an incarnation. The Virata Rupa manifestation of the Lord is simultaneously a challenge to the atheist and a favor for the Asuras, who can think of the Lord as Virat and thus gradually cleanse the dirty things from their hearts in order to become qualified to actually see the transcendental form of the Lord in the near future. This is a favor of the all-merciful Lord to the atheists and the gross materialists. ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांदस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय उत्तरे श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनीति नाम्ने. नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद सद्वैत गणाधर शिवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So we are continuing from this topic of the Virat Rupa. This chapter is a very nice chapter named the first step in God realization. So in the beginning of the chapter, we were hearing the question asked about what is the benefit of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we heard a little bit about that. We also heard about Katvanga Maharaj, that although he was a very saintly king, he didn't know how long he would live, and he got the benediction. And he was told, you have just another moment to live. So immediately he surrendered to the Lord. And there we also heard, it's one of my favorite purports actually, especially in the second canto, about the importance of being alert to the prime duty of life. So when I was much younger, I was very inspired by Vishnu Jana Swami, especially his kirtans and also his classes. So there is one very famous class, because there are not many recordings of his classes, because he passed away even before Prabhupada, I think around March 76. Nobody knows, but disappeared at that time. So it was him and Tamal Krishna Goswami, and they were doing a summary of this Bhagavatam Canto 2, Chapter 1. They were covering many texts on the Radha Damodar bus. So there is a whole recording of the morning program and the lecture. So there, when I was very young, I remember hearing this, that the intelligence means to be alert to the prime duty of life. And that's specifically in relation to that pastime of Katvanga Maharaj. Then later we're hearing a little bit about the importance of meditating on the Lord, and basically the process of Dhyan Yoga is being referred to here. So in the preceding verses to today's verse, there are different points about that Dhyana Yoga, which is also what Katvanga Maharaj did. At the time of death, he was focusing internally. So there's 8 stages in that process of Dhyana Yoga. So then we hear about withdrawing of the senses, we hear about how we should meditate, on which form, which is the correct deity to meditate, etc. And now, yesterday we heard about pranayama, we heard about controlling the mind, pratyahara, withdrawing of the senses. And then here in this chapter, the Virat Rupa is also given, because that is, as Prabhupada explains, that's a method by which even atheists and people who are very attached to the gross matter, they can understand and they can meditate on something. We heard in the purport how, although Arjuna himself was very qualified, he's a bhakta, but at the same time, in order to facilitate the understanding for others, the Virat Rupa was given in that. And later we heard how Arjuna, after seeing, he requested Krishna again to withdraw so he could see the personal form, Bhagavan form, his regular form, two-armed form. So we see also in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he's taking the position as bewildered in order to facilitate our ability to understand this knowledge. So this is the role which Krishna gives to the devotee, that the devotees also, they can take different roles in order to facilitate other people's understanding. So we see that also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so many different pastimes. So this Virat Rupa form, we heard a lot about it in the last 2 classes, so I will focus on some other points today. So let's look here. So this first thing it's describing is that this Vishesha is given here as personal. But generally we have the word Vishesha, it means actually a different meaning generally. Can anyone say what generally Vishesha refers to? Variety, right? So this is the link between variety and personal, because the qualification of being a person is that you have a variation of other people, right? Otherwise, if we're all the same, we're all, everything is one, then there's no individuality. But of course, we understand that each individual soul is unique. Each individual person is unique. So therefore, that's why this word is given there, Vishesha.
And then it's showing that this Virata Rupa form is called Stavishtaha. So Stavishtaha, it means grossly material. So this is actually not the general form which one should worship upon. As we have seen in the previous verses, we have seen the Ashtanga Yoga process being given. Generally we say Ashtanga, but the original, normally it's called Dhyana Yoga. Then later also people, they call it Raja Yoga. And then you have different kind of corruptions of this idea. So, was it Vivekananda or Ramakrishna? They made one famous book, Raja Yoga, right? It was one of the influential Hinduism books in Western academia. And we see also there is a very big asana practice. I mean, they're focusing in asana called Ashtanga Yoga in Mysore. So that's one of the biggest yoga schools in the world. But actually, they taught some other details also. Him and one of his co-students, Iyengar, they studied under a guru called Krishnamacharya. He is actually Sri Vaishnava. And Iyengar also was Sri Vaishnava. But when they came to the West, they realized that people, they don't want to follow the Yamas, the Niyamas. They don't want to follow rules and regulations. And they saw also that people in the West, they're not so interested in God, a lot of people. So then they watered it down and it became just asana. But the original meaning of the Ashtanga Yoga process, the Dhyana Yoga process, is the Ishvara Pranidhana, to actually rendering oneself to the Lord, to Ishvara. And actually that text is given by, that's called Yoga Sutra, so that's given by Patanjali Muni, who is not considered to be avatar of Anantashesh, of Lord Balaram. And the primary commentator on that text is actually Vyasa. So there, most of the people in the West, when they think of yoga, they think only of asana. But we can understand that these eight steps are there, and that culminates in samadhi, and that culminates in the perfect concentration, the perfect remembrance of the Lord. So therefore, that's why we see that this in these previous verses. So we've seen in the previous verses, first, the prerequisite for practicing meditation on the Lord is one must have the proper conduct. So you have the yamas and the niyamas. So they include many different aspects like brahmacharya, like aparigraha, non-attachment to different things, to asteya, not to steal. And what other ones there are? There's many of them they're given. So we have the yamas and then we have the niyamas. Then the next stage is asana. So therefore we see, was it in yesterday's text? Yeah, it was in yesterday's text. Then we see that one should control the sitting posture. So the process of doing the physical asana is to make the body very healthy and very strong, very good in posture, so one can become qualified to meditate for a long time. So one regulates his behavior by yamas and niyamas. He becomes, we see also in Bhagavad Gita, this Krishna is explaining this, that one should be controlled in the nidrahara, like the eating, the sleeping, the different activities, recreation. So then asana, we have to practice that in the Dhyana Yoga system, Yama Niyama Asana Pranayama. Then it's explained yesterday also about the pranayama, the different ways to control the internal energy, the prana, and by especially by breathing exercises. So generally in the West people only know these two, because these are the palatable ones for commercial yoga practice. So Yama Niyama Asana Pranayama, and then Pratyahara. Prati means counter, so ahara means the sometimes we say eating, but means to consume. So it means to withdraw our consumption of sense objects in this world, to reduce our consumption of sense objects in this world. Pratyahara. And then dharana. Dharana means to have a one-pointed concentration, to be aware what is the object of concentration. So we understand that from Yoga Sutras, that's called Ishvara. So that's called Vishnu. So therefore one must be focused on Vishnu. And we see that always, if you look actually, even in modern commercial yoga teachers like Iyengar, for example, he himself also is Sri Vaishnava. So if people were sincere in the West and they followed this yoga process, what we call yoga process, then they will see the other aspects of his theology, not only the physical practice. And Acharyas explained that this Ashtanga Yoga process, the first few steps, that's a karma yoga. The middle steps is a jnana yoga, and the last steps is bhakti yoga and culminates in samadhi. So dharana means to have that one-pointed focus. And then dhyana means to fix the mind on that. And then when you fix it completely, that's called samadhi. So actually this dhyana comes from the same root, dhi, which means to concentrate the mind. But samadhi means complete or perfect. So when you have perfect remembrance, perfect understanding, then you reach that stage of samadhi. So here, in order to cater for this, as Prabhupada says in today's purport, he says, less intelligent man cannot conceive of the transcendental all spiritual form, but they are astounded by his different energies. So a lot of people in the modern age, they are not, it's not easy for them. So therefore, Virat Rupa is also given as a way, as a methodology of some kind of remembrance of the Lord. Although as we understand, that is not the proper form. That's just given to help them. So actually in the yoga process, they are specifically, they are connecting with Paramatma. And if you're more advanced, then you connect with Bhagavan. So a lot of people, when they commentate on yoga philosophy, they generally, a lot of mainstream commentators, they have an impersonal tinge to it. Or some of them even, they're quite like Shankara style impersonal. But when you look in actually, in, for instance, in Yoga Sutras, Ishwara is given there, and the qualities of Ishwara are given, that he is the one, he's creating the laws, he's the one who is overseeing everything. So many, many personal attributes are given. And we can see that both Patanjali and Vyasa, of course, because he, not only Yoga Sutras he gave commentary, but also in Vedanta Sutra he's given commentary, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. That's called Bhasayam Brahma Sutranam, it's given. So we can see that they all understand Ishwara to be personal. But because there is a tendency when people are in the mode of passion and people are in the mode of ignorance to have misunderstanding, therefore the Virat Rupa is given. But of course, that's, Prabhupada explains, that's called less intelligent. Because the real object of meditation is not some impersonal energy, is not Virat Rupa, but is Bhagavan, is the personal form of the Lord. So dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pasyantiyam yogino, that actually their mind should be fixed. Dhyana avastita, stita means to be fixed in one place. It's the same word we have in English, stand. So dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa, in the mind, pasyantiyam yogino. So this is the importance of this process. And we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining about the three stages of theological understanding. What is the verse starting with again? About Brahmaiti Paramatni what is this? Vadanti tattva vidas tattvam yajgyanam advayam Brahmaiti Paramatmeti Bhagavan iti shabdyate. So although there is this non-dual substance, which is known, Prabhupada translates interestingly, he says non-dual substance. So yajgyanam advayam, but still there is, it's one, it's dual, absolute, it's non-dual, absolute, but within that absolute there is variety. Brahmaiti, Paramatmaiti, Bhagavan iti shabdyate. So therefore the Vadanti tattva vidas, those who know tattva, they understand these three phases, these three levels of the absolute truth as being the impersonal energy of the Lord, as being the localized form of the Lord, Paramatma, Antaryami, and ultimately Bhagavan, the personal form which possesses all of the different opulences. So we can see that those who understand this, they are called, they understand tattva, right? So tattva is an interesting word. I recently heard the meaning of this word tattva. So tat, it has two parts to the word. Tat is the, demonstrative pronoun. So like you have the word that in English, that and this. So they are demonstrative pronouns, right? They demonstrate something, and it's a pronoun, it's not a name of a person or a tree or something like that. So tat refers to something, and tvam means like in English ness, like the suffix ness or like the suffix ty, like you have anxiety or like ness, like happiness, boldness. So this word means tat, means something which exists, because something which you demonstrate is something which exists, right? So tat in philosophy comes to mean, demonstrative pronoun comes to mean something real which exists. And ness means, so it's like thatness, you can say. So it means the philosophical category of real things which exist, or the three ontological categories. Ontological meaning the essential foundational elements of what exists, the foundational parts of things which exist. So therefore, tattva actually is a technical word which is referring to these, the different aspects of the divine, the ontological aspects. So this Bhagavan actually is the most appropriate form to worship and to meditate upon. But we see also, not only in Bhagavatam, it's also previous verses mentioning the chanting of Om. And we see also in the Bhagavad Gita, it's given. Krishna is also describing, just like this chapter is describing the seed, describing withdrawal of the senses, describing certain behaviors. So we see the parallel between the two, but ultimately Arjuna, he says, actually this is not possible to practice. For me, this is very hard to practice this form of meditation. And therefore, Krishna gives options, and ultimately he says the topmost is the bhakti yoga. Therefore he explains that yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmana shraddhavan bhajateyomam somay yukto tomomata. That of all of the yogis, there are many types of yogis, of all of these yogis, yoginam api sarvesham, one who has taken me as the supreme goal and is worshipping me, antaratmana shraddhavan, and worshipping me with faith, bhajateyomam, he is considered to be the topmost. So we see that this Dhyana Yoga process was there. That, what is that verse? Krita Yoga Rayato Vishnum Traitayam Yajato Makai Dwarpare Paricharyayam Kolotad Hari Kirtana. That in the first Yuga, Krita Yuga, Satya Yuga, that was the process which was given. That you can just sit down, meditate, and you're withdrawing the senses, and you're choosing the object of meditation, which is the Lord, and then you're completely putting your mind there, and when you perfect that, you reach samadhi. So we've seen that commentators, acharyas, they have linked that these stages, the ultimate stages of Ashtanga, of Dhyana Yoga, they are actually parallel with Bhakti Yoga process, but at the same time we can see that such a process is not practical for most of us. Just in previous ages it was very easy just to sustain the body. But we can see in the modern age it's getting harder and harder. It's something which I appreciate a lot because I travel. So having been to many, many countries around the world, every time I come to America, it's a culture shock how opulent America is, materially speaking. You don't see these kind of cars which you have in America in most of the world. And such big houses, especially in Florida, such big houses. Just before I was in the US, I was in Colombia. So there we can see it's much less wealthy of a country, and government is much more corrupt, at least in the gross sense, and there's a lot more struggle for existence, a lot more crime. Another time we were there with Mahavishnu Maharaj, and we were in Medellin, which is, anyone heard of Pablo Escobar? He was the biggest drug lord. So later they caught him, but still there's a lot of remnants of all of those gangs and everything. So one day we were doing japa walk in the, there's a devotee, he rented a house to have a retreat with Maharaj. So we went in the morning to japa walk to the park, and as we were doing japa, we were wondering that there's a crowd coming around a bin. There was a big bin, like how you have here in the temple, like a big dumpster bin. And there was a crowd around, and then people were standing there, and then after a few minutes a police car came. And we were thinking, what's going on? What's in the bin? They opened the bin and there was a bag and body inside. So in this age, Kali Yuga is so many problems we see. In the US sometimes we forget it. Sometimes, although still in the US a lot of problems, a lot of suffering, a lot of political problems. We also, you know, so many issues. I'm from England the same. But still it's a little bit more sense gratification here, a little bit more comfortable life. But we can see in Kali Yuga so many problems, so much crime, so much hypocrisy, cheating. Most of the world actually are not what we call first world countries. First world countries is a very small percentage of the world. Most of Africa, most of South America, a lot of Asia, even Europe, whole east side of Europe is not doing so well, materially speaking, compared to the first world, what we call first world countries, Western Europe, US, Australia, New Zealand, like that. People are very much suffering. So just to eat and sleep is very hard. Just to pay your own house. Just like in London, most people, I don't know, maybe in Alachua, houses are much cheaper comparatively. But for instance, in London, most of the people I know, they don't own their house. They just have a mortgage and they're paying for most of their life. So this Kali Yuga, we see that everything is getting much worse. And we see with Corona, so many problems coming. Now we have the war in Ukraine, that Putin wants to re-establish the former USSR to some extent. At least he wants to reduce the, how close the border is to NATO, NATO it's called? No, that's something else. I forget what it's called, the Union in Europe, how they have the Marshall Union of all the different armies, militaries. So he wants to increase his border so his Moscow is safer. So we see so many problems coming up. So he's explained that this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. What is that verse? Someone remembers? Kalo doshani dai raja nasti he ko mahan guna. That this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. And even if outside there's not so many problems, inside there's problems. So traveling around, especially because we distribute books, it's a very good way to study psychology and sociology. If one is observant, you can learn a lot about people just by how you distribute books to them. Because for instance, the first thing you're doing is seeing how people receive strangers, people they don't know and people they don't value. Like there's a saying, it's a very nice saying, they say, you can tell the character of a person by how they treat someone they have nothing to gain from. So when you distribute books, you're generally stopping people who don't want to be stopped. So you can study the psychology and you can see differences, cultural differences, ethnic differences, national differences. So you can see. And you can also see the way people are thinking. You can study their psychology as well. You can study what is their theological understanding. You can see how they understand the world. So one thing I noticed, even in the US, sometimes there's more material opulence, but people, they're much more suffering up here. In South America, Africa, you go, people there, maybe there's less material opulence, there's less facility, houses are a little bit not so opulent, maybe they can't afford a car, maybe they don't have so much option, you know, like you have Publix or different supermarkets here, you can buy whatever you want, Walmart, so many things. Maybe they don't have such gross things, but at least subtly in the mind, there generally I find more peaceful. When I distribute books in the US, I find people are very much, they have victim psychology. They think, oh, I'm so bad, you know, my life is so hard. I'm like, why is your life hard? I was just in Miami, and the people always complaining, but they're so rich there, you know. I met so many people, like millionaires there in Miami, because we had yoga programs there. And but still, whenever I say, how are you, a lot of them, they say, normally when you say, how are you, we have enough pride to say, I'm okay. Even if we're like struggling to pay the bills, even if we're having issue with our spouse, even if our kids are having some issues, whatever it is, generally we still say, I'm okay. But even these people, they admit it. They say, I'm suffering like anything. I'm like, why are you suffering? Your car is worth $200,000. You have big house. You have wonderful family. Everything materially, you have it. So why are you suffering? So then they understand that, yes, something is missing. So, but still, especially in the US, I find there's this victim psychology that they don't really suffer so much like I've seen in other places, but the mind is the cause of suffering. So that Krishna also is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, that Purusha Sukha Dukkhana, they're actually, the most of the cause of our own suffering is from our own self, and is from our own consciousness, from our own understanding. So that's the importance of this yoga system, Bhakti Yoga, especially philosophy is given very nicely in Bhagavad Gita. We see actually in the yoga system, it's more emphasizing the sadhana, but not so much the knowledge. If you look at Yoga Sutras, not so much philosophy there, it's more practical. But we're very fortunate, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is so much information given. There's one debate, it's very funny, that I don't know if you heard of Tribhuvanath Prabhu, he gave a debate at the top university in Ireland. It was called Protecting Society from, well, that was the name of his lecture, but it was an anti-cult group. So they also invited Hare Krishna, thinking Hare Krishnas are a cult. So he named his talk Protecting Society from Ignorance. And the main point which he was saying was that just because some people misrepresent spirituality, it doesn't mean that you have to put everyone in the same box. Just like if some food is contaminated, it doesn't mean you reject food. You just get the correct food. So we have a need for metaphysical, for spiritual knowledge, because we understand that's a superior dimension to life. But we have to get it from the right source. So that's the importance of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So he was saying that the Vedas, there's such an ancient tradition, oldest tradition known to humankind. And not only that, but there are so many books that it'll take you your... There's so many books it can take you many lifetimes to read. And then the man, the MC was saying, ah, is that why you guys believe in reincarnation? So you can come back and finish the rest of your books. So, but actually our Bhakti Yoga process means that if you understand the essence, then that's sufficient. So therefore Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita, that Bhaktya Mam Abhijanati Yavan Yaschasmi Tatva. That just if you have devotion to me, Bhaktya Mam Abhijanati, you can understand me. And you can come back to me. So this is the thing. If you understand the essence, and the essence is given, that Kalotad Hari Kirtanat, the essence is the congregational chanting and glorification of the Lord. So that's the two things very important, especially in our bhakti process. We obviously, as Prabhupada explains, although Virat is given in this part of Bhagavatam, that's to understand how materialists and what Prabhupada says, less intelligent people can understand the Lord. But for us, we have the Bhagavan understanding, the beautiful Shamasundar form of the Lord, which we can meditate on, which we can worship. And Prabhupada explains another very important point, last point, the importance of the scripture. Where is it? Here. Asuras, the Lord is accepted by all of the different saints and sages, and also in Bhagavad Gita it's given, and all of the acharyas, Shankara, Madhva, etc., Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but asuras do not accept evidential proof from the revealed scriptures, nor do they recognize the authority of the great acharyas. So actually this is the very important point, the final point, is that what is called in the Western philosophy, our epistemological understanding, episteme, Greek word, mean like how you know, to know. So how do we know what we know? What is the source of knowledge? What is the rational methodology of understanding this world and things of this world and beyond this world? So one's epistemology is the first step in being a rational philosophical person. And we know, just like in this world, even if you don't study philosophy, we have to act in this world. So in order, and action is the thing which is affecting us, because that's what's creating our karma, our prarabdha, our reactions. So therefore, if one studies philosophy, then the way they act becomes informed. But the problem with asuras is their epistemology is incorrect. Ishwaro ham mahambhogi, siddho ham balavanski. Krishna explains in the Gita that because of not understanding the scriptures, because of not accepting scriptures, they are thinking, I am the Ishwaroham, I am the controller, aham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Siddhoham, I am perfect. Balavanski, I am very strong, I am very happy. But we know actually that one who does not accept the scriptures, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchratra Vidimvina, I can't give hair bhakti utpataiva kalpate, that you will just create a disturbance in the society. So the first step in knowledge, the first step is to understand and accept the principle of Shastra. Because otherwise we will... there's two issues with not accepting Shastra. First thing is, if we don't accept superior authority, then we tend to think I am the authority. But as we all know, we are all conditioned souls. We are all imperfect. We have many issues. Not only we have the four imperfections, Brahm, Pramada, Vipralipsa, Karnapata, we have the imperfect senses, we have the tendency to commit mistakes, we have the... what is the other two? I don't remember. Eh? Cheating propensity, and last one? Tendency to become illusion. So we have also these four defects, but we also have the psychological illusion that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, as we see in Bhagavad Gita. So that's what material world means, jagat. It means kartitvam, bhoktitvam. I am... To think that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, and raga, dvesha, attachment and aversion. This is the nature of this world. But when one understands Shastra, then one immediately becomes put on the right path. And therefore, one will know how to act. One will know what is the correct way to, as we heard in previous verses, to understand what is the prime duty of life. So that's very important. That's the most important thing which we can pick up from this lesson here. That Shravanam and Kirtanam, the two opening stages of the nine processes of bhakti. Shravan and Kirtan. And Kirtan means to glorify, also to chant the holy name. So this is the importance given here, that although Dhyana Yoga process actually is what's shown in these preceding verses, and also in this text Virat Rupa conception is given, this universal form which is not really the proper form of the Lord, we can understand the essential principle behind this is samadhi, or is completely fixing one's mind to concentrate on the Lord. So samadhi, as we understand, dharana, dhyan, samadhi, as the acharyas explain, the commentators explain on yoga tradition, that these are parallel to bhakti yoga path. So therefore we can understand that especially in Kali Yuga, Kalota Dhari Kirtana, that the essence is to chant the names of the Lord, to glorify the Lord. And we've heard how his Shravanam is very important, because if not, we become Asura class of society. So this is the conclusion given here. So thank you very much. If there's any question or comments, we can open up.
Haribol, thank you for the wonderful class. Would you consider the atheist asuras? I mean, you think they can be categorized as asuras?
Yeah, good question. Thank you. The question is, you're basically asking, is it synonymous? You can say synonymous. Yeah, that's an interesting point, because we have different words which we can call, which Prabhupada will translate as demoniac, or he'll translate them as the fools, or different things Prabhupada explains these words. But we see also you have you have two types of demoniac. One is those who come in the demoniac class of society, demoniac lineage, like Daityas, Danava. We see pastime of, what was it, the name? He was demon, but he's devotee. Yeah, Vitrasura. And we see also Prahlad Maharaj, technically, his ethnicity is demon. His ethnicity class is demon, because he comes in that line from Hiranyaka. So, but there is two types. One is you're born in that background, but another one is you have that quality. So as we know, Prahlad, he is the topmost of the devotees. So the asura is not referring to the ethnic types of demon, the demoniac lineages. It's not referring to the demoniac birth, but is one who is impious. Because Su we have in our Greco-Roman languages in the form of EU. This is what I learned from Hridayananda Maharaj. Su is considered cognate with EU, the EU prefix, which means good, right? Like you have euphoria or euphemism, you have this EU word. So Su, it means those who are good. So the A means none. So it means people who are not good. So there is one, I heard in class, I forget, Ashushu, Ramate, Indriya something. There is one, I think it's Shankaracharya, he gave definition of asura. It's Sutta Papu, I heard. I never heard before, but he gave in a class recently, in the manner. Sorry? Yes, there is also that verse, that Vishnu Bhakta Bhavet Deva Asurastat Viparya, that the Vishnu Bhakta, they are known as Deva, or they are known as spiritual, or Di means also effulgence, or Divyam, transcendental. The same cognate you have in Latin, Div, like divine, divino. So Asurastar Viparaya, that the Asura, another definition Prabhu kindly gave, is that the opposite of the Devas, the opposite of those who are... Yeah, I forget what it is. I had it on my notes, but I lost it. It's Ashushu Rama. What he said, basically, he gave it in a class, then I later Googled it, because I never heard. And it was Shankaracharya put in one of his commentaries. It's like Ashushu Ramate Indriya, something like that. That the meaning of Asura given by Shankaracharya is one who is delighting in sensory pursuits, in sense gratification, which is the same thing we also hear in the Gita also. So, and the essence of sense gratification is this psychology that Ishwaroham, Aham Bhogi, that controlling and enjoying. So that's why Jagat definition is also given. Bhoktritvam, Kartritvam. The thinking that I'm doing everything and they're thinking that I can enjoy. First we want to control things, and by controlling them we make them object of our enjoyment. So atheist is specifically referring to one who does not believe in God. So it's not a literal etymological parallel, but they're the same type of people. Because Ravindra Suri Prabhu gave a very nice definition of atheism and sense gratification connection he gives. He says sense gratification is the act of atheism. Very nice. Because the psychology of atheism, in order to enjoy something, you have to identify with the body. You cannot enjoy sense gratification if you are thinking you're a spirit soul. You have to identify with the body. So by identifying with the body, we become locked into false ego, because false ego is the essential element of this material body. The false ego is the most subtle element of the... We have the shukshma sharira and the stula sharira, right? But the false ego is the essential thing which is keeping us here. So in that sense, it's atheist. But at the same time, atheist refers specifically to their theological understanding. So some of us, we are philosophically we are theists, but by our actions we become psychological atheists. So that's most of the US, I think, is theist, right? Statistically, but we can see philosophically maybe they are theistic, but psychologically they are not theistic. So is that okay answer, Prabhu? What's the time? I think 3-4 minutes. If there's any last question. Was the question, why would you say
that they're psychologically not theistic?
Okay, yeah, good question. So these actually two terms is given by Hridayananda Maharaj, which I heard. So he explains that a philosophical theist means that you accept theoretically, accept philosophically that a God exists. But psychological atheist means that although you're thinking, although you say, yeah, God exists, but the way we act, we actually thinking we are God. And the essence of thinking God is, as we explained, to think I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Because the essence of theism means to understand God is the center. So when we act in sense gratification, when we act in materialistic life, we are trying to put ourselves in the center. We are trying to make sense objects, people, money, everything revolve around us. So, but we understand, of course, none of us, we are the center. If I am the center, you are the center, if so many of us are we're all thinking I'm the center, then there's no center, right? Because then there's just everyone. So therefore, to think we are in the center, that's illusion. And we think we'll become happy by that. But we can see logically it follows that if thinking oneself is the center is illusion, happiness based on that premise naturally follows that's also illusion. So that's why sense gratification ultimately frustrates us, because ultimately it's illusory. So that's what he defines psychological atheist as.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting way to look at it for sure, yeah. And these are big topics and there's many approaches to it. But, I mean, you know, mixed devotees, you know, they have part of their hearts open to recognizing the Supreme Lord and that they have a relationship, and yet they still have addiction to conditional proclivities.
Mm.
So, I mean... You know, I remember hearing a talk by Tamal Krishna Maharaj about neophyte devotees. You know, in one sense, they're not even real devotees yet. And from one angle of vision,
yes.
Because it's not steady, and it's really the enthusiasm is very much influenced that all the sense gratification lines up. And then when the sense gratification doesn't line up, the enthusiasm. So I guess you could call them... Well, to call them atheists...
But when he uses that term, he doesn't use it for devotees, he uses it for general class of society.
Yeah, but everybody's a devotee.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another definition. So practicing Vaishnavas is not like we're aloof from these proclivities just because we're saved Vaishnavas. You know, they also apply to us.
Yeah. No, of course, I understand the point you're making, that still, even as devotees, we may not be completely pure, we may still be attached to so many things. To sense gratification and everything like that. But we see that Krishna is very liberal. We can see. And we see that in the Gita he gives so many gradations. And we see also that even your sarva kama va, moksha kama, even you're desiring so many things in this world, and even if you're desiring liberation, there's two types of people. Or you're also akama, you're also free from desire, but still, if you engage in bhakti yoga, you're also protected. So, there should be some sensitivity in categorization, but at the same time, philosophical categories exist. So, Prabhu?
I was thinking, in Bhagavad Gita, if we look at dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna, the whole bewilderment that Arjuna went through, first chapter, ended in 46, last verse, where he said he can't fight. It's completely collapsed. And then when Krishna started counseling, first thing he says, the disturbance that you are with is due to the your functional identity.
Mm.
And you are disturbed because you think you are a son of Kunti, you are a Kshatriya, you have to protect the innocent from the aggressors. The whole bewilderment is identify the functional. Mm. But in true sense, you are neither Kuntiputra or Kshatriya.
Mm.
You are soul.
Mm-hmm.
2.13 began. The different dialogue, different platform. So fundamentally, we are servant of the servant of Krishna. But functional identity Arjuna had, that is Kshatriya, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, his fundamental identity intact there, but functional identity was still there.
Mm.
You can say bodily identity was there, sense gratification there, mm. that Kshatriya nature he was born with. But he is a pure devotee, Mahabhagava.
Mm.
You cannot say psychologically or that he was not. So, Prabhupada gives a very interesting explanation, 3.9. Jaggarthat karmana annatra lokayam karma bandhana. What binds, we have to understand what liberates. So there is a two process. One is, what is compositional sense? Arjuna's body made of Kshatriya Sabhav, Kshatriya nature, maybe material elements. But application sense, that when he utilized that, it spiritualized, he's fighting for Krishna. Is it material? No. It is spiritualized. So for a devotee, we cannot use those words.